Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Tuesday, April 2nd, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. The Sitka Sound sacro herring fishery is tapering down, with about half of its year's target harvest still in the water. Although it's looking like a repeat of the 2012 season, this year's guideline harvest level at 11,500 tons is far more conservative than the 29,000 tons Saners targeted last year. During his daily update Monday morning over VHF radio, Fish and Game Management biologist Dave Gordon said active spawning was beginning to dwindle in the northern part of the sound, indicating that the peak season was winding down. There are visibly fewer seiners tied up in Sitka Channel as fishermen drop their nets and head back home. In past seasons, herring fishermen have mopped up the remaining few tons of quota with a cooperative fishery. That's been discussed this year, but Gordon says the matter is not resolved. A co-op may not save this season.
Right now, it looks like there's not much to work with, whether we are in a co-op or not.
Saturday's third opening of the season was initially thought to be around 1,000 tons. The final amount is far less, 173 tons. That puts the harvest for 2013 just short of 5,900 tons, about half of this year's target. On the upside, the department is recording significant amount of spawn, a total of 41 miles off shoreline so far. Also, concentrations of herring that have been seen to the north of Sitka in Salisbury Sound and to the south near Goddard and Dorothy Narrows. Seining has been held in both those areas in past years. In his radio update, Gordon did not rule out a comeback for the 2013 season. Secondary spawning has sometimes brought in marketable volumes of herring, but so far, Gordon says he has not identified a biomass of major size. High school hazing would be outlawed under a bill introduced by State Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins. House Bill 189 defined hazing as subjecting a student to the risk of physical injury for the purpose of initiation or affiliation with an organization. It applies to students from elementary school up through college. The Sitka Democrats' bill would make hazing a misdemeanor unless it results in death or serious physical injury, in which case it would be a felony. It also requires school districts to adopt policies against hazing and to file an annual report on any hazing incidents that result in suspension or expulsion. Districts already report similar cases of bullying and harassment. Chris Tompkins, a 2008 graduate of Sitka High School, says his bill is designed to clarify existing laws protecting students and to bring more awareness to the issue of hazing.
It's unconscionable to me, and both when I was an underclassman and watching it happen to my classmates, and even to a certain extent myself, and as an upperclassman when I watched my classmates, who at one point were on the receiving end of it, perpetrate it. And it's just one of these cycles that has no place in schools.
Christ Tompkins says when he participated in high school sports, he witnessed hazing firsthand, although nothing as bad as what his bill would cover.
Actually, I had a well-developed evasive instinct. So I'm not sure you could ever say I was on the receiving end of it, but my friends were, and I certainly sort of felt intimidated by it because it was happening to people all around me and myself. And it would have happened to myself, too, if I wasn't good at being not in the wrong place at the wrong time.
The measure also protects people who report incidents of hazing. House Bill 189 now sits in the House Education Committee awaiting action. You can link to a copy of the bill on our website, kcaw.org. The commercial longline fishing season for halibut opens Saturday, March 23rd, with just under 3 million pounds to catch in Southeast's Area 2C, over the next 7 months. The halibut catch level is set by the International Pacific Halibut Commission each year. This year's catch amount for Southeast is up about 13% from last year, even though the overall coastwide catch level is down from 2012. IPHC Director Bruce Lehman says there are signs of improvement in halibut stocks in Area 2, which includes Southeast Alaska, British Columbia, and the Pacific Coast states. Lehman visited Petersburg this month, and Joe Vicnicki asked him about the decisions the commission makes about catch levels.
Well, I think what everybody is most concerned about, Joe, is just the changes we've been through in the last several years and trying to sort out some of the problems that we've had in the assessment. So this year we're able to do that, but the net result of it was about a 30% drop in the estimate of how many fish were out there. Hasn't changed how many fish are on the grounds. It's changed our estimate of it, and that's been a tough thing for folks to wrap their heads around.
You've probably heard from Southeast Alaska fleet members about the cuts they've observed over the past decade. And comparing that to what other areas have seen or not seen during that time, what's the rationale for how the areas absorb different cuts or take different cuts, or whether the commission goes with staff recommendations and science and that kind of thing for the different areas?
Yeah, this is kind of an evolving process right now. The staff changed, at the request of the commissioners, the staff changed the way it provided advice this year. But to get to the first part of your question, it's true that 2C and Area 2 in general has gone through some pretty severe cuts in the last little while. Probably not as much in BC, partly because of commission decisions. But I do think we're seeing some of the benefits of that. We're starting to see improvements in Area 2C, actually all of Area 2 right now. But at the request of the commission this year, the staff provided a different framework for its advice. We provided a very large table that just essentially looked at what are the benefits for particular yield levels and what are the potential risks of taking some of those choices. And the commissioners did make their decision on the base of that table, on the basis of that table, but it didn't necessarily translate into the same sort of net result everywhere. For example, in 2C, where there was an expectation of a higher catch limit for this area, that was realized according to what the previous harvest policy would have been. The other areas didn't actually match what the harvest policy was, so they came down from where they were last year, but they didn't align with what the harvest policy might have been had the commissioners taken the same consistent approach everywhere.
And that just comes down to a political decision at the commission level.
It does, basically. Yeah. It's something that they have the authority and the responsibility to make those decisions, and so it's a different framework for how we've operated in the past, and it's been, to be honest, it's been an evolutionary process for the staff as well as for the commission.
As staff, what do you think of the new system of the recommendations, as you were talking about, the blue line approach, which always makes me think of a hockey game? what do you think of how that went in the first year? Did it help things? Did it confuse things in getting that word out to the public of the possibilities? And
I think it was somewhat confusing. I think we all hoped that what would come out of this was a clear articulation of just exactly why choices might have been made for particular reasons. And that was the case in some instances, but not necessarily all. I think the staff would ideally like to sort of put some things in front of both the industry and the commissioners and have people make those choices with sort of clear recognition of what the likely consequences will be. And to that extent, it did work. The decisions that were made in recognition of what the likely consequences, at least as best we can estimate them, might be. It wasn't necessarily the same everywhere, as I was saying earlier.
IPHC Director Bruce Lehman speaking with KFSK's Joe Vicnicki in Petersburg last week. Sea Alaska Corporation has a new board member. Richard Reinhart Jr. was appointed at the Regional Native Corporations board meeting last week in Juneau. Reinhart was Sea Alaska's chief financial officer and corporate controller from 2003 to 2009. He is from Wrangell and is a managing partner at Raven Potlatch Real Estate in Bellevue, Washington. He's run for the board several times, starting in 1995.
You know, it's just it's something I wanted to do for a long time, and I just feel really honored and quite humble about it all. I understand there were many qualified candidates, and I know Sea Alaska has a number of qualified shareholders, so I was just glad they chose me.
Reinhart says he hopes to apply his familiarity with the corporation and his business expertise while on the board. That includes Sea Alaska's effort to develop new ventures within Southeast. He fills the seat left open when Clarence Jackson Sr. of CAKE died earlier this year. Jackson was on the board since the corporation's beginning.
He'll be greatly missed. And I'm, you know, honored to fill that position for this remaining few months of his term. But I think I'm there as a Sea Alaska person, not as somebody to replace Clarence.
Reinhart is one of 13 Sea Alaska board members. He'll run for re-election in this spring's shareholder elections. His business, Raven Potlatch Real Estate, works with tribal and other investors. It worked on housing projects in petroleum-producing regions.
I just seen a huge opportunity with all the explosive growth in western North Dakota from the oil exploration that's happening out there, and then coupling that with extreme lack of housing. it's kind of the fastest growing area in the country as far as housing development and growth.
Reinhardt is of Tlingit and Haida descent. Sea Alaska has about 21,000 shareholders, and many of those not living in Alaska are in Washington state. Governor Sean Parnell has ordered state flags to be lowered when memorial services are held for a pilot and a trooper killed in a helicopter crash. The flags will be lowered on the days memorials are held for Trooper Tage Toll and Pilot Mel Nading. Neither memorial has yet been scheduled. They died when the helicopter crashed Saturday near Talkeetna. Also killed was Carl Ober of Talkeetna. Ober was injured in a snow machine accident. The helicopter crashed shortly after picking him up and when it was en route to meet an ambulance at a Talkeetna gas station. Six horses that were running along busy Anchorage streets have been recaptured. The horses fled their pens at Horse Trekking Alaska, galloping around town before their recapture Monday afternoon. Jessica Noel, who co-manages the horse and sleigh riding business with her husband Ben, says she wonders if the escape was someone's idea of an April Fool's joke. Noel and her husband spent Sunday night at a B&B for her birthday, but let neighbors know so they could keep an eye on the horses. No one saw anything amiss, but the Noels soon learned of the escape. One horse was captured while the rest kept going. Ben Noel captured them at Abbott Road near a Cars Safeway store. Jessica Noel wants to thank authorities and careful drivers for the happy outcome. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. Today in Sitka, expected to be mostly cloudy with scattered rain and snow showers. Highs around 44 with west wind 10 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with increasing high clouds late. Lows around 33 and light winds. Wednesday, mostly cloudy with highs around 44. Northeast wind 5 miles per hour. And Thursday will be sunny with highs around 43. Northeast wind 5 to 15 miles per hour. And this weekend, it'll be cloudy with chance of rain. You are listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka.